Hi there, it's Dr. Mike Jones, and I'm the Managing Director of Impact Minerals Limited, listed on the ASX under code IPT.
Good to see you, Mike. It's been a while, so I thought we'd dive in for a little bit of an update from you, because this is one of our sort of favourite stories from last year. I want to see how you're getting on, though. So why don't you just tell us a little bit, in 30 seconds, tell us a little bit about what you've got?
Certainly. So we've been developing and we're in feasibility studies on our Lake Hope High Purity Alumina project, which is located here in Western Australia, just about 500 kilometres east of where I am.
Right, okay. So this thing, as we're going to discuss, has scale, has margin, has a lot going for it. But I think you describe this HPA, High Purity Alumina, as a little known commodity in one of your presentations that we were looking at. So why don't you tell people what it's used for? Let's start with that.
Yeah, certainly. Look, it's not widely known, but it is actually a crucial part of the whole energy transition, which is obviously one of the big themes that's driving the mining industry at the moment. So it has two main uses. First one is in batteries, lithium-ion batteries in particular, and it stops thermal runaway. So if you recall, the Samsung phones were exploding a few years ago, and even the Tesla cars, which are sort of catching on fire, that's because they have high purity alumina in there, and if the seals on that aren't doing their job properly, they explode. So it's thermally inert, chemically inert, and is an integral part of that battery architecture. The second main use is in LEDs, so light-emitting diodes, in particular lights. So the USA, for example, last year banned incandescent light globes, new globes going in. So there's a sort of a legislated demand increase coming on in through there. And there's also in your ULEDs, your OLEDs, your Samsung TVs, your LG TVs, all those smart screens that you're all looking at are also got HPA in them. And also sapphire glass, so the surface coatings of your watches, your phones, and your little tablets, most of those are made up of HPA, high purity alumina. It's actually sapphire. That's actually the mineral, aluminium oxide, and it's very scratch resistant, as we all know. And there's an increasing use in things like semiconductors and also in catalysts. So that's one of the things that we've been investigating. So, look, it's a very intriguing product, and we believe that we can produce a lot of it going forward.
Okay, so, and like I say, we'll get into the scale of what you've got in a second here, but as probably someone who wasn't really doing much with HPA 2-3 years ago, you probably had to go up the learning curve yourself. So in terms of the available market, lots of use cases, but in terms of the supply into the market and how you insert yourself into the market, what have you learned? What else do you need to know?
Yes. So in anything like HPA, which is a bulk commodity, so, you know, similar to other things like kaolin or mineral sands and similar things, well, even iron ore and coal, you need an offtake agreement. You need partners that are interested in your particular product. So the thing about HPA is that you do need to produce not just the chemical purity, obviously that's what the HP stands for, but also we need to provide specific physical specifications for different end users. And that requires a sort of close relationship between ourselves, our product development team, and then the end users. And that's an area ripe for a lot of work and a lot of collaboration going forward. So it's my email just going off there. So we've learned that that's a very special relationship that you need to develop. And we're in a position that we've knocked on quite a few doors now for end users. And the first thing they ask for is, we need product. And those that follow the story, we're a little way from being 100% confident that the chemical purity that we can supply is going to be consistent for those end users. And that's because we're still doing the metallurgical test work. We're trying to optimize one of the two processes that we have. But we're pretty confident in the results that we've got so far that we will have that by middle of this year, and that will be the real start of our marketing campaign. So the two main uses we mentioned, we've got batteries on the one hand, LEDs in the other, and a third hand if you've got them, which is all these other sort of relatively minor uses. There are established supply chains there. And breaking into any supply chain is always, fraught with difficulties. But in our case, we believe that because of the lowest, we have the chance of being the lowest cost producer, which we've spoken about before. We believe that that will be an entry point into the marketplace for us, and we'll build on that as we go forward.
Okay, it helps. Being in the sort of lowest quartile or lowest cost producer definitely helps because means you've got margin to play with what you sell it at. So you can undercut if you wanted to go down that route. Hopefully we don't get into all of that, but you could if you wanted to. But talk to me about the supply side of things in terms of the market. Is this in deficit? Will it be in deficit? What does that kind of production profile look like globally at the moment? Because if there's oversupply, clearly that doesn't bode well. But if we're moving some kind of deficit, maybe it's a little bit more appealing. So what do we know?
The average demand side first, as far as we can establish at the moment, is around about 50,000 tonnes per annum. But it has been growing and continues to grow at about 20% per annum. So we're going to double, you know, if not more, by the end of the decade, which is only six, you know, short years ago. And look, making HPA is tricky. It is difficult. So it isn't something that people can kind of just, you know, pour into and suddenly everyone is making HPA. And, you know, a number of players have tried on the ASX so far, and really there's only one company, which is Alpha HPA, that's got anywhere near commercial production. And all congratulations to them, got big government grants last week to help build their larger plant.
Is this Australia or do you mean globally?
No, in Australia, sorry, in terms of the usage. Yep. Yeah, the 50,000 tonnes per annum is global. Yeah.
Right.
And so, you know, Alpha HPA looking to build a 10,000 tonne per annum plant. By the time that's built, you know, demand should be up to 70,000-80,000, you know, tonnes per annum. So they'll be supplying, call it, you know, 10% of the world's, you know, the world's market. But like I was saying, it's a difficult thing to make. And in that respect, you know, a number of companies have been trying over the years. Some companies have been going 5, 6, 7 years, and we've almost caught them up within 12 months because of the unique nature of the Lake Hope deposit and the ease with which we can process it, remove the impurities and get to the four end, the 99.99% purity. So we think that that's you know, a huge commercial advantage.
Right, okay. And I always think with the scenarios like that, it's either a good thing or a bad thing in the sense that there's not much competition, but there's also a kind of monopoly on the technology side of things in a way, right? So you've got to kind of go in and compete or partner. So talk to us about the processes that you're going through at the moment, because then again, I've heard you talk elsewhere about just exploring around the not just the metallurgy, but the sort of extraction process that you're going to have to try and understand to be able to kind of supply product to potential partners or off-takers.
So the deposit was found, well, as we've spoken about before, you know, when we found the project on LinkedIn, and you know, the discoverer Roland Goddard had sort of decided that a lot of people were struggling to make HPA. And so he thought of other minerals, apart from the common ones that people are using, such as kaolin, and he thought of other minerals that we could get alumina out of. He went off and designed a process that we call the sulfate process, which is basically a sulfuric acid process, worked out, you know, a method to get HPA, and then actually went out and found the deposit. So it was really sort of, you know, back to front thinking, and a very clever piece of work. So that dominated a lot of the work that Roland had been doing leading up to Impact coming on board, and that underpinned the scoping study which we released in November last year, which showed, you know, that we'd have, you know, one of, if not the lowest operating costs for HPA globally. However, in the back of Roland's quite significant brain was the opportunity to try a second process using a completely different set of reagents to also produce HPA. And he'd actually literally done this trial in a slow cooker. Slow cooker, you can go down to Harvey Norman or, you know, where you make your soups, like you make your soup on. And he made HPA on his benchtop. And we're actually putting together a video at the moment, basically, you know, how to make HPA at home. And put the reagents in the slow cooker, heat it up to 90 degrees, put in the clay, and it will just go straight into solution, basically. A little bit of stirring, filter it, take that out, add another reagent, filter that again, and you've basically got the precursor to HPA. And so all the different companies that are out there trying to make HPA, the common theme that they have is that the last stage is what we call calcination, basically heating it up under certain temperatures and for certain time lengths. And it's that that gives you the physical specification of the product. Whereas getting to that stage, there's many different routes. But what we've shown is that, well, we believe we've got one of the quickest and the fastest and the cheapest routes to get to that particular stage. And that's where we get the chemical purity from. So right now, we've announced this year that we've got these two processes. We believe that this low-temperature process, the LTL process, as we call it, will actually have lower capital costs than the sulfate process. We've removed one stage of the process completely. And I will emphasize that compared to things like ion exchange, which some of our peers are doing in order to get to the HPA, our process is relatively straightforward. There's no bells and whistles. It's just three chemical reactions, and you end up with the aluminous salt at the end, which then goes into the calcining. And that's all driven by the unique nature of the deposit, which, as we discussed, you know, very fine particles of clay in the top 2 meters of the salt lake, you know, here in Western Australia. So those natural advantages flow through not just for the mining, which is cheap and easy, but then into the processing, which gives us a straightforward method to get to the chemical purity. And that's the real key for us.
Very interesting. Very interesting. Because you talk about, okay, it's all with Hope Lake. It's all in the sort of top 10 meters. In terms of the removal extraction, that should be relatively cheap. You're suggesting that it is. In terms of the processing, it sounds very cheap. In terms of, you know, certainly with the low temperature stuff.
Yeah.
So the capex, when can you, with the feasibility study, when can you start giving us a sense of the kind of costs and therefore I'm hoping margin for the different products? Is that going to be later this year?
Yeah, so look, one of the key outcomes of the pre-feasibility study, so I will preface it by saying, so after the scoping study that we put out in November, we're already sort of well into the pre-feasibility study. That's going to be finished by the end of this year. And one of the key outcomes of that will be to make a decision on which process, you know, we're going to go forward with.
Right.
Certainly the low temperature process has a lot of advantages in terms of energy input, in terms of the actual, the actual OPEX, the operating cost. But I think the significant breakthrough will be in the capital expenditure. So under the sulfate process, it was 250 million Australian dollars. We believe that, you know, it'll be significantly less to build that 10,000 ton per annum plant should the LTL process stack up now in the optimization work that is now underway.
And how do you, with the kind of on the commercial side, so I keep promising to get to the actual, you know, that's if we talk about the scale of it, but with the commercial component, how do you work through a process of saying, well, maybe we start off with selling into some of the lower grade or the lower purity stuff first because it's easier, it's less capex. Yeah. And then you have to say to a partner, look, we can guarantee you X tons of this stuff per year, but our ultimate game is we want to move further up downstream and get into specialty applications because the margins are insane. You're talking about price ranges per ton of about 50,000 versus, you know, 5 to 15,000 on, you know, abrasives, you know, catalysts, etc. So you've got to have a view of what you want to be eventually if you are to kind of stage your way through to that kind of specialty application side of the market. How do you get there? Because if I'm buying from you, I want to know I'm going to have a long-term supply if that's what my contract says, and you're not going to get distracted, you know, going off elsewhere. So when do those discussions start, and, you know, and who's going to do them?
Yeah,
on your side.
So with been on the lookout for a marketing person, for about 3 or 4 months now, and we've had a few, you know, real outstanding candidates put their hand up. And so once that person comes on board, then that whole process will really kick off in a big way. What we found is that there's definitely demand there, but, you know, the minute we knock on the door, the first thing they say is, I need product, you know, what can you send me? 200 grams, you know, is it a kilo, is it or whatever? And so we have actually pulled back from that because we don't want to be over-promising and then some problem in the lab or, you know, or whatever. So as I said, yeah, by the middle of this year, which is not that far away, three months away, 4 months away, we will have sufficient product that we're happy with it, the quality and consistency that we can then sort of hand out to the potential, you know, end users. And we've actually had a number of inquiries from people who have skills in that calcining, you know, this large that last step that I was talking about. So the current incumbent producers of HPA, they all make their HPA out of aluminium metal mostly, which has been mined as bauxite. It's gone through the environmentally unfriendly, energy-intensive Bayer process and it's come out as aluminium metal, and then they then refine that with alcohol, etc. So the input costs are very high. The input ESG is exceptionally high, if you think about all the red muds that come out of the alumina refineries. But they all have skills in calcining. And so we've had a few, inquiries saying, maybe we could become a supplier into people who've got the the end product skills, and we can form some sort of relationship with there, because that's where there is significant volume. Now, you talked about, cheap versus margins. They generally can't do both if you study strategy. Alpha's made some great inroads, by being, going for margins on very small volumes of product. But you can't really build a business, around that without having access to huge capital. The alternative is you're doing on price, I mean, our HPA is going to be as good as anybody else's. And so we believe that that's going to be the entry into the marketplace.
Right, but you've got, when you're doing all of this testing work, you've got to have a market in mind. And I guess what you're saying is you're going after the kind of lithium battery coatings. That is the optimum space to play.
So
is that right?
If I can just interrupt there, actually, it's the LED market will be the biggest one that we go for. That's where the largest growth is. If you look at the graphs in our presentations, that's where the largest growth is forecast to be. And look, battery technology, they change all the time. Moving to solid state. I mean, some of those have HPA in them, some of them don't. The supply chains for battery technology are very much dominated, obviously, by China. If you're going to get in there in a big way, you've got to break into the Chinese market. I'd be the first to say that won't be a straightforward thing to do unless you can offer a product that's significantly cheaper than the guys that are producing it already. On the LED side in particular, I mean, something as mundane as all of these new buildings you're seeing completely covered in LEDs, every one of them's got a little sapphire wafer in them, which is, made of HPA, and, massive demand in through there. We've seen a few graphs from Samsung in terms of their forecast for general LED growth and LED screens, et cetera, and it's enormous, by the end of this decade. So those are the big areas that we'll go for. Yeah.
Okay, so you've got a strong sense of where you're working towards. This isn't a case of just produce it and they shall come. Brilliant. And this marketing person, you'll hope to conclude that over the next couple of quarters, right?
Yeah, that's right. Yeah.
Right, okay. It's advancing quite quickly, isn't it? I mean, remarkable.
It is, and we're on this accelerated timeframe, and I might have come if I mentioned now, but the LTL process, right? We only started that in the laboratory, proper laboratory experiment back in November, and allowing for Christmas, New Year. And remember, it's just lab operators on a benchtop, so it's not a continuous process. We got to HPA in February, right? Now, there's still several companies out there that took 2 years or 3 years to get to their first ever HPA. And one group's been going 7 years, and they're only just now thinking about building a pilot plant, demonstration plant. We'll be there sometime late next year. So we are absolutely catching up with the rest of the people.
Are you sure you're not missing anything? Because it sounds like you're rushing ahead and doing it quicker than anyone else could. So do you know what I mean? It just sounds, because if I'm looking for peers, I'm like looking at everyone else going, well, they've been quite slow, you've been quite quick. What am I missing here? Why have you able to skip a few phases?
All driven by the natural advantages of Lake Hope. Okay, it's most of it's submicron in size in terms of the grain size, and that gives us, so A, easy to dig up, but B, those of you who remember physics, is that the very fine grain size basically gives you an infinite surface area in any bit of clay. And so literally you drop it into the reagent because it's heated up. It just goes into solution, with very little stirring, and you're already two-thirds of the way there. cheap reagents, simple chemistry, nothing complicated. Out we come with a powder that can be calcined to get to HPA.
Okay. And you're in the middle of nowhere. You're not. You're quite well connected, but it is remote from humans, it seems. So pluses and minuses there for you.
Indeed. We'll only be campaign mining, you know, sort of every 2 or 3 years. There's no need for a permanent camp. It'll be the trucking. It'll be the truck drivers that are the main guys on site, probably 8 to 10 months a year. And look, early days, but we will bring the material to the coast somewhere, you know, Perth or Bunbury, because we need access to the reagents that we'll need to import to be able to process the material. And so the costs of mining and trucking are something in the order of like only 5% of the operating cost. So it, you know, it's almost an insignificant amount. Just getting the material, you know, out and getting it to wherever we're going to build the processing plant. So it's more a case of the reagents. Getting the final product to client is easy. It's only 1,000 tons per month at the most, and a lot of that might be special bags of white powder, as we've discussed before, and those can just go in your suitcase or they can just be air freighted. So it's not a complex problem getting the material to the client.
Okay, so let's now describe the Lake Hope itself. We've all seen sort of pictures of the lake, seen people walking across the lake. You've reminded us it's really super shallow and super to easy to access, super cheap to access. I'm looking for red flags. I'm trying to find problems with this thing. So it looks beautiful. Usually that causes people to get a little bit worried about the mining people coming along and extracting stuff. So talk to us about that.
So the area where it sits, and Roland chose it partly because of this, is it's a long way from anywhere, but is actually relatively accessible because there is actually a fire break that runs right up to these two particular lakes. The two lakes form part of a lake system, the Salt Lake system, which are basically just little depressions, and the Lake Hope system sort of stretches over at least 50 or 60 kilometres. And there's lots of these little depressions in the lake. And so there's nothing special. It's not like there's only one. You know, there's a lot of those lakes in that, you know, in that particular area. We've done the heritage survey with the Ngadju people, and there are no impediments. You know, there's no sacred sites there. There's no artifacts or anything like that. And they're very encouraged to be, going forward, and we'll be engaging with them over the next few months. That's a big thing as part of the feasibility study, in terms of getting a mining agreement with them. So there's no sites yet of cultural importance, heritage importance. So we'll be engaging with the local families and then getting that going. So that's one big tick. The second one is the environment. So we have done the baseline environmental surveys, and on the surface of the lake, I mean, the natural pH there is 3. So if you stand in that lake for too long, your boots will rot, and then you'll be getting a chemical peel on the soles of your feet. And so nothing lives on the lake. There's a few spiders, but none of them are rare. And so in terms of the actual mining on the lake, there, again, no environmental impediments. So again, that's another big tick. Now there'll be a road in, and there'll be some turning circles for the trucks. But in terms of the area we'll disturb, it's actually minuscule. So we don't see any issues. There's a national park further to the south covering similar terrain. There's probably some lakes with similar material in there, but they're under the national park, so they're not a competition either. So it's almost a unique set of natural, you know, circumstances, that have led to this slightly unbelievable story at times.
Right. Now, how are we doing for finance? So have you got what you need to move this thing forward? Because looking at its sort of recent trading, there's a little bit of, bit of liquidity there, even a little pop recently. But moving forward, what do you need to take this through to, getting the feasibility study done?
Yeah. So we think that to get us well into the definitive feasibility study, sort of say by the end of next year, it's going to be, $6-7 million. A few million to finish the pre-feasibility study, but included in that is also the startup cost for the pilot plant, which should get us to sort of 10 to 20 tons per annum of HPA production. So clearly we haven't got that in the bank. So we're looking at various sources of funding. We've had, quite a few knocks on the door. In fact, I will say, I've had seven groups approach me, seven broking groups. Now, that I've never, ever had that before. So it just shows you the level of interest that's in this project, as we've told the story pretty far and wide over the last 12 months.
So what do you do about that one? Because obviously you're 60 million, you're... Compared to when we first started talking, you kind of moved through the phase that people kind of understood. Well, it's an easy story to understand, but you've still got to manage the money. You've got to raise money without feeling you're sort of diluting yourselves and your shareholders. So are you looking at strategic money? Will you take it at PubCo? Will you look at an asset level? And when do you do all of this?
So look, for where we are, if someone was to come at the asset level, we consider that hasn't happened, and I've got no problem saying that. And I think once we go down the chain and start to get the material into qualification and start to look at takeoff, then there'll be really interest from big players in the industry, I think, in terms of what we're doing. So we've had a couple of, as well as the seven broking groups, there's been a couple of high net worths that have been in touch with us. We're always in discussions with those. And then the last raise, we got very strong support from our two German shareholders. They put in a considerable amount of money 13 months ago. And so, we're getting close to the time when, we'll be talking to those people.
Okay. Right. So we'll kind of let you go through the phases there and come back and tell us all about it, maybe even kind of run through it a bit more in a bit more detail another time. You have got another project, Arkin, which is on the rare earth side. Rare earth has struggled for the last 18 months. Price-wise, it's come off as quickly as it ramped up. But you're going to start a drilling program anyway. Why do that now?
So we've got a number of other exploration projects in the portfolio, which we've talked about over the years. As the focus on Lake Hope has increased, we've been doing various deals on the other projects. So we have a group that's trying to do a float on our Commonwealth gold silver project, which is in the Lachlan Fold Belt. They've raised significant seed capital. The IPO is sort of ready to go, but obviously the market's not quite right for that. But hopefully that'll get out of the door in the next few months. And we've also got the Broken Hill project, which was the focus of the Explore program with BHP. Remember, we were one of the first seven members of the first cohort with BHP. We're talking to a number of very serious players now in terms of doing a joint venture on that. And that leaves us really with one other major project, which is the Arkin Strategic and Battery Metals project located here also in WA, only about 150 km from here. We've done a lot of soil sampling out through there. It's in the wheat belt. Ground access has been pretty good for us. It does take time. We've got to sit down and drink lots of cups of tea with the landowners. But we got permission to get in there, so we've just snuck in a cheeky little drill program. And look, the rare earth, the story has come off in the rare earths, but there's still a lot of investor interest in there. And we've been very specific that we're targeting clay-hosted rare earths. It's my view that solid rare earths in the hard rock, there's going to be very, very few of those mines ever get off the ground in Australia. It's all about the clays. And so we're doing an air core program, very quick and easy drilling into the top 50 meters. One of the reasons we're drilling it is we actually had some of the strongest rare earth in soil results ever reported in WA. So it was like, this is a standout rare earth target. And we've also put a few drill holes over some of the copper anomalies that we've got there. Not the main one that we also announced this year. That will come later in the year, more of your traditional copper anomaly. So look, quick and easy, dirt cheap drilling. In fact, the program's actually finished already. And so we look forward to getting those results out.
Brilliant. Okay, well, look, Mike, appreciate the update. I'm glad to see things moving forward so well for you. Hopefully starting to catch the attention of more than just the brokers, but also retail looking in at this thing.
Yeah. We are actually at record market cap over the last week. We talked about the story being a slow burn. I think, finally the market is paying attention to what we might have on our hands here. And so definitely we need to keep following the story.